Hey, welcome to Voices of Montana. It's great to have you join me again. I'm Steve Arviska. I'm not Tom. Tom's taking a little bit of break. He will absolutely be back. He just asked me to dive in and guide our conversation here on Voices of Montana. If you were listening yesterday, you know I asked you a question about whether you're hopeful for the future of Montana. And I think that's a really important question, especially in this crazy world of politics and the things that are happening in the media and your life. And boy, are we hopeful? And I don't know how you answered that for yourself, but I want to continue to answer that question by talking about what I consider the essential elements for our success in the future. Remember yesterday we talked about infrastructure. I also think it's essential we talk about people, about education, about business, and we talk about leadership. And guess what? We're going to talk about leadership today because we have a guest with us today, Riley Neal, who's a candidate for the U.S. Senate. I'm going to have a conversation with Riley. So are you. I want to talk about leadership, and I want to talk about if we are hopeful for the future of Montana and the future of our country. Coming up on Voices of Montana. Let's continue our discussion about Montana's future and what I call the essential building blocks of our success. And I mentioned those earlier in the opening. Remember what they were: infrastructure, people, education, business, and leadership. And as we go along, we're going to talk a little bit more detail about that. Yesterday, we had a conversation with David Smith and Allison Corbin there with the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. They've got a summit coming up on May 20th and 21st in Billings, and they're going to release what they call the TRIP report, which is, Cody, kind of like a report card Montana's transportation infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out on a cycle. I don't know if it's every 2 years, that sort of thing. That will tell us, how are we doing? Are we taking care of our bridges, our roads, that sort of thing? And then they're going to have a community-wide, statewide conversation about the health of Montana's infrastructure. And that's what that coalition does. Remember, I think infrastructure is foundational to us being successful as a state, to sustaining our quality of life, to growing economically. We need that stuff that's in the ground. And I'm excited to talk to our guest today because earlier we were talking about water infrastructure. And so we may get into that discussion, but infrastructure is important. I'm going to argue, though, that we can't sustain and grow Montana's economy and our outstanding quality of life without effective, principled, smart leadership. Every cycle, every 2 years, we have the opportunity to elect leaders, right? Yeah. That want to lead our state and lead the country. And so we're participants in selecting leadership for our state. So that's what I want to talk about today. We're going to talk some politics, but essential to that in my mind is really a dialogue on, do we have the leadership we need to be successful as a state and successful as a country? And joining me for that conversation today is Riley Neal, a candidate, a Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate. Riley, welcome.
Thank you, Steve. It's great to be here.
Yeah, and I know you came in today hoping you could see Tom because you had this little, I don't know if it was a bet you had with Tom, like you wanted to one-up him on something. I'm not sure what it was, but you got me.
It was a little told you so moment.
Like, what was it?
When I was running for the write-in campaign for U.S. Congress here in the Eastern District,
okay,
I spent a lot of time on the ground. It was just last 2 months of the cycle. And I went to all 40 counties in just a couple of months, and I spent a lot of time on the doors and talking to people. And when I came in to talk to Tom, he said, "So what are they saying on the doors?" I said, "I tell you what, Tom, that CI-128 is going to pass." He said, "Oh, no, it's not. No, it's not." And I said, "Well, I'm going to come back on this show, and I'm going to tell you it passed," and it did by 58%. Because Montanans, you know, we just want the government out of our business. We want a small government that works for the people and stays out of our business. So I was hearing that on the ground, and Tom wasn't so sure, but now I can say in hindsight, I was right.
Tom, I know you're out there somewhere, and you, Riley, she was right, apparently. Hey, now, Riley, Tom knows you well and other people, and you've been busy for years, really, engaging with the state of Montana and the people. But not everybody knows your background. And so let's start there. Let's just tell us a little bit about you. And then always that question, why are you running? So right. let's go. Let's start there.
So I'm from Livingston, just down the street here. And I've been there about 26 years where I ran a weekly newspaper, the Livingston Weekly Current, right there at Lewis and Main Streets. So for about 10 years, I had folks come in and tell us what was important in their community, what they wanted us to cover. And those same individuals asked me to run for Montana State House, and I ran, and I won for that seat because our readers knew I was objective, I was fair, and I listened. So as I did this two-month write-in campaign, as I chatted about earlier, I saw something on the ground, and that was that people were not showing up for the folks who elected them. And our representatives were not showing up, especially in rural Montana. And the people's voice, concern, the things that are important to them, they weren't being addressed meaningfully because people weren't coming back to check in.
Talking physically, just not being there and being present and being
present, showing back up. I mean, I go to communities. I say, hey, when's the last time you saw Steve Daines? Some people have never seen him. 12 years plus that he served the state. I feel like that's what Montanans deserve. They deserve representative government. So I'm running for U.S. Senate to give Montanans someone to vote for who's going to actually represent them and come back. And come back, even after I'm elected U.S. Senator, I'll come back to Baker. I'll come back to Culbertson. I'll come back to Libby and Troy. You know, these folks don't often see their representatives show up on the ground to listen to them. And that's really important.
So I want to dive into your platform a little bit. You were able to join the team earlier this morning, so we've had a little bit of time. I was listening and made some notes on that. I want to do that, but I was thinking about this election for the U.S. Senate in Montana. It's very interesting. You have a lot of candidates. What, there are 11 in total? Is that what the number is? Something like that?
There are a bunch of them. I know this one.
Yeah, good for you. So that makes it interesting. And you have an independent candidate that's raising a lot of money. And so, you know, how do you convince the state of Montana that you're the right leader to serve in this role for us?
Well, leadership is about listening and hearing and representing. In this particular political office of U.S. Senator, you have to represent the people's interests. So when we talk about the platform today, everything I'm talking to you about isn't something that some political party gave me. It isn't. These aren't concerns. We were talking earlier today about, you're talking about infrastructure, about the Irrigation Infrastructure Act that my team is working on. That's not something we just came up with from political operatives and pundits that we did some polling on. Mm-hmm. We actually went on the ground for the last 2 years and been talking to irrigators. We've been talking to ag producers and finding out what they need. And so when they tell us what we need are some baseline matching funds, we'll build something to address that need. That's leadership.
So let's dive in. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate the whole dialogue that we had earlier about water resources and the infrastructure important to that. I didn't mention this, but for about a decade, I was in water resource development and management in Colorado, ran two of Colorado's largest water conservancy district, provided water for irrigation, provided water for municipal use. Colorado, like Montana, like the arid western states, we don't thrive without water resources, and its management is essential. And you can't manage water without infrastructure, and you can't have infrastructure without somebody's got to make an investment there for the. So I appreciate that being something important to you. What else on your list of issues, platforms? What are you really going there and say, man, if I could accomplish these four things, here's what I want to focus on?
Universal health care, number one. We hear that across
rural. Oh, we're not going to do that again. You think so? How is that going to work?
Single payer system. Well, let's look at what we already have on the ground.
Okay.
Here in Montana, Healthy Montana Kids. Are you familiar with that program?
I am not.
Healthy
Montana. Are you? John is just raising her hand in studio. Say, are you a healthy Montana kid?
You're Montana. We have one right here.
Okay.
So here's the investment we make in healthcare. We make that investment in healthcare, and we made that investment with Healthy Montana Kids so that you could be standing here today and healthy, that we don't address the issues afterwards. We address them with preventative care. We address the issue of providing health care. You know, I ran a business in Livingston for about 10 years, and everybody in my business always had access to health care. I was the guarantor, and they got a better deal on their health care coverage because I was the guarantor.
Yeah.
Now, why can't the federal government be the guarantor for a single payer system?
Well, we do that. We are a guarantor. You know, look at Medicaid, Medicare. I mean, we are. And I would argue those systems aren't necessarily functioning in the proper way with fiscal responsibility, et cetera. We've got a lot of work to fix what we've already have.
Yes, we do. And I think we need reform there. I don't think it's working. I don't think it's working at all. I think we have much better plans we could put into action than the plan we have right now. If we have to stick with the plan we have right now, we got a problem when you turn 26. When you turn 26, you fall off what they call the cliff.
Did you fall off the cliff, Jonna?
I'm only 22.
Oh, she's good.
She works here, she probably has really good health insurance, you know? So, which is great. A lot of people get insurance through their jobs. Again, their businesses are the guarantors. So they're able to get a cheaper rate just by nature of the fact there's four of them instead of you just going out on your own onto the open markets.
Yeah, right. The marketplace.
So what we're talking about when we talk about universal health care is helping the people who are 26 to 50 plus. They are having problems getting health care. When you're 26, you fall off. you fall off the cliff. You no longer qualify to stay on your family's insurance. You may work for a place that has insurance for you. So one thing we could do to approach that, just to start, one line of code, you would say, change that from 26 to 35. We've talked to insurance companies, and they've said that would be great because that cliff is really a challenge for young people. So just to start, if we were going to do some mild reform, we could change one line of code and let people stay on their family insurance. That would address some of the issues with Medicaid, and those costs. But also, we could keep people on that insurance through the time that they want to start a family. So they don't have to choose, do I want to start a family or buy a house? When you're 26 and you fall off that cliff, why? Why are we doing that to our young people? We're setting them back. We're talking about hope today. How can you have hope when you're 26? You lose your insurance. You fall off your family insurance. You can't afford to buy a house in Montana. You know, where's the hope in that? You know, we have to provide some hope and access. And so if we were to have the federal government be the guarantor for this plan, that would be us paying for it. You know, single payer, we're still going to pay for it. We're just going to get better rates. We're going to get better deductibles. The same thing that my four employees got for 10 years by nature of me saying, I'll be your guarantor. So we have a model, somewhat of a model in Healthy Montana Kids, and we've seen the success of that. And I think we could get that for the whole entire country, Montanans especially. We deserve health care. We deserve rural health care. We need to shore up these rural systems, not hollow them out. And for our young people, we've got to do something. Even at the very least, we have it's called the Family Insurance Act that I've put forward. And that's just to change that line of code to make it so that people could stay on that family insurance till they're 35.
We are talking to Riley Neal, a candidate for U.S. Senate here in Montana. And I think we might have a question for you on the phone. Cody, do we want to take the call? Hello, you're on Voices of Montana. What's your question for Riley?
Well, good morning. This is Nancy up here in Roundup, and I'm so glad this is an opportunity to talk to a Democrat. Good morning, Riley. And I have a comment and also a question.
Okay, thank
you. We're seeing we are traditionally a two-party system, and we have been seeing a civil war within the Democrat Party for quite some time. And Democrats, the old Democrats are in the minority now. It's obvious that the socialists have taken over the party. And the Republicans have lost millions of voters, and so has the Democrat Party. Americans are disgruntled, and they're not happy with the two-party system. And so where are these disgruntled Americans moving towards? Are they moving towards voting as independents, as the extreme progressives? And the biggest threat, in my opinion, Riley, is the Islamic movement across our country. We're seeing Muslims enter into our politics and attacking the very foundation of our country. They want to get rid of our electorate voting system to make it easier to get into the political field here and to change the United States of America.
Nancy, now, we've got a break coming up.
My question is
thank
this.
You.
What will you do to combat the Islamic movement here in the country when you get into the Senate? And thank you.
Wow, welcome back. We're going to have even more of a lively conversation. We have a special guest here in Voices of Montana. Our topic is leadership. One of those essential building blocks for our success as a state, as a country, is having the right leaders in place. We're talking with Riley Neal, candidate for the U.S. Senate. Riley, I made notes here, and I'll skip through them really quick because I want you to answer the question from our caller just a moment ago. But here's what I said, and I'll read this, excuse me. But frankly, I want to elect a leader. I'm not interested in which party wins. I want to see people win. So I know you're running as a Democrat. I think I first registered as a Republican in 1977. Now, don't do the math, Cody, on figuring out how old I am. So, but to me, I'm okay with that. We should be able to have a conversation about how to move Montana forward, how to move our country forward, how to save problems together as people who care about our state, about our community, about our neighbors, et cetera, et cetera. And boy, we've just seemed to lost that ability to come together and figure stuff out. You served in the Montana House. I had an opportunity. I left Montana, went to Colorado. I served in the Colorado legislature. And that years and years ago, it just feels so different now than it was even a decade. And in my case, many decades ago. What? We've just gotten off the rails. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But let's answer the question.
Sure. And it ties into that too, because nobody ever gets what they want. Everything, you know, there has to be compromise in order for us to really lead as representatives. We have to understand that the compromise is baked in. It's built in. And to Nancy, thanks for calling. Thanks for your question. I am a Democrat because I'm a woman, and Democrats are the party that respect women and women's rights. And that I'm a different kind of Democrat, primarily because I'm hanging out in rural Montana nonstop and listening to the people and listening to what's important to the people on the ground. When we talk about potential independent in the race, I don't think anyone's gotten enough signatures to get on the ballot yet, even though they may have made a lot of money.
I think the deadline is here in a couple weeks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as to that, I think it's interesting because if you're a pollster and you called a Montanan and you said, what do you lean, Republican, Democrat, or independent? Almost all of us would say independent, but that just means I cross over and vote for a Republican commissioner every now and then. So I don't think we have an organized independent party in Montana. I've, to my knowledge, no independent has ever won any elected race in Montana. I'm not even sure they've ever won a race for state house or Senate. I don't think so. I don't think an independent has ever won in Montana. But I do know that, and to your first point, and to Nancy's question, that this division in our party is not something we see on the ground. When we go to the grocery store together, when you know we're in the aisles together in the grocery store, we say hello to each other. If someone is stuck in a ditch, we don't say, are you a Democrat, Republican, or independent before we pull them out of the ditch. And for me as a Democrat, my advisors on my campaign, they're Democrats, Republicans. One of my top advisors is Governor Schweitzer, who endorsed my campaign and who still makes lots of wonderful policy recommendations to my team because he understood what it meant to be a representative, whether you're Democrat or Republican or this new independent.
Well, I think, Cody, do we still have a caller? Do we still have Skip on the line who's got a question for you? And then I want to talk about one of your platform provisions is Congress must do its job. I want to talk about that. But let's do Skip's question first. Skip, welcome to Voices of Montana. Oh, I'm sorry, Skip. Call back if we chatted too much and we lost you. My apologies for that. Call back if you have your question. Let's go back to your platform. Congress must get their job done. Talk about that. What are we not doing? What needs to be done? And what are the roadblocks?
Well, what I hear on the ground, and I hate to echo what I told to Tom 2 years ago, but what I hear on the ground is people are not happy with this president's agenda. They're simply not happy with it. They want to see Congress standing up to the executive branch and holding some of that power and retaining some of that power for the people, because Congress represents the people. The executive branch, certainly, that's an elected position, but Congress is a repository of all of the people, so of all of our representation. So I hear this on the ground, and like I said, Steve, today you're going to hear platform and policy that's built by Montanans. This is built by Montanans. Trump's agenda is not popular on the ground in Montana, broadly, as far as I can tell. Now, certainly there are people who believe he's doing a good job and believe this administration's doing a good job, but that's not the majority of the people that I'm talking to. And that's Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and especially a lot of people who are disillusioned with politics, to your point and to the caller's point, too. They're done with it. They're just done with it. And those individuals point to this administration being ineffective and not answering to the people.
Well, let's talk about, I get that, a dynamic between the administration and Congress, whose role, that sort of thing, the conflicts and what that leadership dynamic looks like or doesn't look like. What's, you know, there, we could argue there someone's not exercising some leadership in either way. I want to get a little more practical. We have a $39 trillion debt. What the heck are we doing about that? And you realize in the last 5 years, it's grown by $10 trillion. That's a huge issue. Social Security Trust Fund going to be insolvent by 2032, 2034. I haven't heard any discussion of the strategy on that trust fund. A lot of people rely on that as a promise from their employment. So there's some real practical. We haven't passed a farm bill. 8 years. When I read your platform and it said Congress has to get their job done, I wasn't thinking about what Trump's doing or not doing. I was thinking about, they haven't balanced the budget and they haven't passed the farm bill and they haven't done. I think there's a legitimate conversation to have around there. So, well, hi, everybody. This is Steve Arviscow, not Tom, but Tom will be back. He's taking a well-deserved break, and he asked me to fill in, and I am having a blast today. We're talking about leadership and the essential role leadership plays in our ability to sustain and grow our economy and continue to have a great quality of life. And we are indeed honored to have Riley Neal, a Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate, join Voices of Montana today. I think we've got a call online. We'll get to that in just a second. We were talking about Congress needing to get their job done. But I want to – well, let's go to Lisa. She's still on the line because last time I went along, when did we miss the caller? And so I don't want to do that to you, Lisa. Lisa, do you have a question for Riley?
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and I have a little advice for her. I'm a Democrat. My closest and dearest friend is a Republican. We do very many things together. We create miracles working together. But I want to explain that as a Democrat, she's going to be attacked with the transgender issue. And it amazes me that farmers and ranchers would put their livelihoods on the line just to punish transgender people. High input costs, lost sales will break a business. I can't believe people would risk their livelihoods over extreme emotional political rhetoric, which is a distraction from reality.
Lisa, thank you. I don't know if there was a question there. I appreciate your comment. Riley, any feedback that you would have? And then we'll move on to some other questions.
Again, you know, here in Montana, we just want a small government that works for the people and stays out of our business.
Now, we were talking about the healthcare as one of your platforms is helping people afford to stay and live and be in. And so healthcare was important to you, as is affordability, et cetera. You had mentioned that. But we did get a text message as you were talking about that. And I have to read this part from one of our listeners. Are you okay?
Yes, I think you should.
I'm going to take a shot here. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but one of our listeners said, if you can't adult at 26, then that's on your parents, not taxpayers. It did put a smile on my face, Riley, and so I'll give you a chance to respond to that text. There was more there, but we won't go get into it.
Sure. Well, I mean, if we invest in the health of our society, it's going to be an investment in the health of our economy, an investment in the health of our future, you know, our future generation. So I get it that a lot of people might think it's socialized healthcare, but this isn't coming from me. Again, my team or political operatives in D.C., this is coming from the Montana people. This is the majority of the people in the state of Montana that we talk to. They want a solution to the healthcare issue. They want their rural hospitals open. They don't want to have to drive 2.5 hours to get a blood draw. You know, and we're talking our veterans too. Having a universal healthcare system that shores up the whole system is better for us as a society. And I don't disagree. If you're 26 and you can't figure out how to pay your bills, well, yeah, maybe you could use a little bit more home, you know, some advice at home. But
now all the 26-year-olds out there,
I know. But
I guess I'm out of dad's basement now.
But I will say, I think it's important though to recognize it's really hard to buy a house in Montana right now. It's really hard to make a living on the wages that are offered here, and so. What I hear on the ground is that people want health care. They just can't afford it. We need to address that however we address it.
Yeah, I would not argue that we don't have an issue. My wife's been a nurse for 32 years. My son's a physician. My daughter's a mental health therapist. I mean, they're in the middle of all this. There's never enough resources. There are never enough people. Capacity is always strained. So the system's not working. And then, frankly, I'll just talk about me. I'm getting older.
Yeah.
And as we get older as a country, demographically, we're going to need that system to be at its best. And how we accomplish that without burning out all of our healthcare and people
yes,
infrastructure.
Especially the
people. That's one of those building blocks is people. We can't afford to burn them out in the process. And then the other piece is, how do we afford the reform? I mentioned that when we went into the break, that we got almost $39 trillion in debt. So you show up in the U.S. Senate, if you were to be elected and you've got a big debt you have to figure out, what's your resolution?
I'm going right to the General Accounting Office and I want to see the books. Because one thing that Congress does, we appropriate funds. Certainly we vote for funds to go different places. But we also have oversight. And that's what I think is lacking right now. I want to go in. I want to look at why 30% of our federal workforce in the state of Montana, USDA, FSA offices, BLM, what happened? Why were those people let go? If we're sending $1 billion a day to Iran, I want to know why our national parks are not being staffed. That's what I want to know. I want to know how come those USDA research stations are understaffed and their budgets are being cut. We need that science. So if we have this huge debt, where's it going? Why?
I think we all have that same question.
Yeah.
Now, just for clarity,
yeah.
We're not sending $1 billion a day to Iran. We're investing, if I could stretch that a little bit and say we're trying to make the world safe. We're trying to make our country safe. Now, we can argue about whether that's a great decision or not. But I want to be clear, we're not writing a check to Iran for $1 billion.
Well, we might as well be, though, Steve. That money's leaving the coffers either way.
All right, so we have a debt. You and I are not going to figure this out today.
No, we're not.
But the callers may have a better idea for us. We do have a national debt. We can't. I agree with you. The tenet about Congress getting their job done, absolutely, 100%. There's things that are just have been left on the table way too long, and that's why I want to elect a leader.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't care about the party that wins. I want to put the right people in the right place to get the job done. So when they go to work every day on a consistent basis, they're solving problems. That's what good leaders do. That's what we have to do when we run our businesses, when we help lead our family as a husband and wife. We're solving the family's problems and challenges and creating opportunities. Leaders need to be problem solvers, and I don't think we're there. So we need someone who's going to show up in D.C., excuse the rant from Steve, D.C. as that kind of leader. So what I'm hearing now is all this, the battles over redistricting and all this stuff going on so that we can shift the balance of power. And I'm going to say that's happening on both sides. To me, that accomplishes nothing. Tell me what you're going to do for the people. Now, I know, Raleigh, you've spent a lot of time in the trenches talking to people in Montana. I think some of what you're hearing from me may be similar to what you're hearing as you knock on doors and talk to people. They want problems to be solved, and they don't see that happening. How do you address that?
Well, you brought up the Farm Bill. And the Farm Bill that's coming out of the House right now doesn't have mandatory country of origin labeling. It doesn't have right to repair. It doesn't have protections for trade, for tariff consistency, stability. We're not seeing that in this Farm Bill. So I would hope that the Senate puts forward something that's more workable for our ag producers. But if that doesn't happen, January 1st, 2027, that's going to be one of my top priorities, along with going to that general accounting office and having the oversight on our spending, because we're not going to address the debt unless we're really sure about what we're actually spending our money on. So I think it's really important, if we're going to take the priorities of the people on the ground in rural Montana, who's mostly your listenership,
yeah,
that is going to be through a mechanism like the Farm Bill. And we can't back down. We have to put our toe on the line for Montana and say, we have to have mandatory country of label origin, or country of origin labeling.
Yeah, we knew what you were saying. But, yeah.
We have to have that in the Farm Bill. That is number one. I'd say that's one of the top priorities I hear from ag producers. Now, we have a lot of ag producers who can't move their product because of tariffs and chaotic trade policies. We need to address that. These are the things that need to happen right away for Montana. Montana is an ag-based economy. No matter what folks say, they want it to be. This governor we have right now wants us to lead with financial services and real estate, and that is not going to sustain our state. Our state is an ag economy-based state. So we can't make this – we can't have – hey, I know I'm watching your U.S. debt clock as it's going up and up.
U.S. debt is just ticking.
And meanwhile, you know, someone can't even sell their soybeans.
All right. So I have a question for you. We're going to take a break, but here's the question. Are you hopeful about the future of Montana? Don't answer it yet. Take some time to think about that, because I want to ask you specifically, what makes you hopeful about the future of Montana? And frankly, we're at our 250th anniversary for our country. What makes you hopeful about the United States of America? As a U.S. senator, I want my elected officials to not only solve problems, but to be able to articulate what they're hopeful about, what that vision might be. So think about that. Well, welcome back. Man, the fastest hour in broadcasting just evaporated. We've had this great conversation with Riley Neal, Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate, wanting to represent Montana in the Senate, Riley, and that's a lofty aspiration. And I know from just our brief time and to get to know each other here this morning, you're working hard. You're working at it. I appreciate that. We're going to take a question. Was it from Rod? Rod from Fort Benton, and then we want to wrap up and talk about what we're hopeful about. So, Rod, go ahead. Your question for Riley.
Hey, Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. When you talked about representing agriculture in Montana, I feel that's a huge, important thing. But you talked about, I think your last comment was you wouldn't be able to sell your soybeans. I wondered, are you really interested in Montana agriculture? How many soybeans are actually sold and grown in the state of Montana? Thank you.
Thanks, Rod.
Thanks, Rod. I appreciate that. I said that because I just was visiting with a soybean farmer in Sydney, and they were telling me about some of their struggles. They have changed and shifted this particular growing season to growing hay. They have a couple of plots of corn too that they're growing specifically for someone. But yeah, they're growing soybeans. It's not the predominant commodity in Montana, but certainly there are people, especially in northeastern Montana, who do grow soybeans and have had a lot of struggles with that crop over the last year due to tariffs and trade policies.
Riley, thanks. It's been a pleasure having you here today. I want you to be able to end on, because I wake up every day and I'm hopeful about Montana. And there are things that I would love to change at the national level as well that frustrate me and frankly even worry me. But I try and remain hopeful. And how about you? What are you hopeful for our country and for Montana? Do you think our future looks bright?
I think if the three of us could sit in this studio today and have the conversation we've had, even if we're coming at it from different angles, that gives me hope. We all can get along. We can talk about issues. That's what politics is. It's to stop us from punching each other in the face, right? So that we can have these kinds of conversations, heated sometimes or disagreeing. That makes me hopeful, especially in Montana, because this is who Montana is. And also on the ground, what really makes me hopeful is how many young people are involved in our politics. You know, seeing those folks show up, want to talk about issues that are important to them, and then working for those issues, listening to them, hearing their concerns, and then building policy that reflects the needs of Montana's youth and our young people going into the future, building that future for Montana.
Well, Riley, I appreciate and respect. I respect anyone who's willing to say, hey, I want to go listen to the people and go to work. Consider voting for me. That is that's a leap, and that's difficult, hard work, and I appreciate you doing that. Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you.
We're going to talk more politics on Voices of Montana on Thursday, Cody, because we have John Binion coming. John just updated a book that he had done years and years ago called Big Sky Politics. So this is the next edition of his analysis of Montana politics, I think from 1945 to 2025. That's a big swath of campaigns and intrigue and all kinds of political stuff. So John's going to be here to talk to us a little bit about his book. And I, like I did with Riley today, I'm going to talk to John about leadership. Like if Montana wants to elect the right people, he's going to give us that overview and that history of Montana politics. Montana moves forward when the right people are in the right place, solving problems for our state. Same thing on a national level. I'm going to get John's take on what that leadership, those characteristics look like. And then I'm also going to ask John about, could Montana ever elect an independent to political office? I don't know. Riley was not optimistic that would ever happen. She doesn't want that to happen, obviously. I'm going to ask John and see what he thinks. So join me Thursday. This is Steve Arviscow on Voices of Montana. It's been my pleasure having this dialogue with you today.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.